Morning.
Today's daf in Bab Metzia is daf Vav. Thank you, Lupin Foundation, for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lon Zechon Shmuz Liba Gavriel Bashmuel. We are in Hayam and Base. We're starting with the two dots towards the top of the Amud. We're starting with Zeyishava She'ein Lo Pachos Mechetzia. So we are now moving ahead in the Mishnah. First Mishnah Bab Metzia started back in Daf Beis Amud Aleph. Dealt with two people holding on to a talus. They are both have an achiza. They are both holding into it. They are both mochzakim in the talus. As a result of that, it's a dispute of money where each one of the litigants is actually has a chazaka, a real holding. And so the Mishnah says, consequently, you have to divide it. You're going to be dividing it with a shvua. Spent a lot of time throughout the Gemara in the last couple of days since the beginning of the Mishnah, discussing who is subscribing to this, the viewpoint of our Mishnah, that you're going to be dividing it with a shvua. But when all is said and done, the Mishnah's ruling is very clear. The division is done with a shvua. The wording of the shvua is now what we're going to be attacking and approaching in this next sugya. I go back to the Mishnah and just reread the words of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Zemer Kula Shaliv, Zemer Kula Shali, each one of them makes a claim that it belongs to both of them. Ze Yishava She'ein Lo Ba Pachos Mechetzia. So this one is going to make a shvua that he does not own less than half. Okay, it sounds like the shvua was constructed by a lawyer, and it's true. And the other one also makes a shvua that he does not own less than half. Okay, the wording of the shvua is obviously strange, but there must have been a considerable amount of consideration going into the shvua as it's formulated. And that's what the Gemara is discussing. We are now starting the Gemara on towards the top of Hamad Beis at the two dots. So, al the Islam Mishtaba, al the Islam Mishtaba. So the Gemara really approaches this point of the Mishnah, formulating the question the following way. Is it really a positive shvua or is it a negative shvua? Is it a shvua on what he owns, or is it a shvua on what he does not own? To get a little bit more clarity on the Gemara's question, take a look at Rashi. Rashi writes, look, what's going to happen is that he's going to make a shvua, he's going to take half. Okay, we know that's the result. So is one possibility is that he's swearing that he has half, because that's what he's going to take. So in other words, the shvua really is a positive statement of that which he owns. He owns half. Now, his original claim was that he owns the whole thing. But obviously, that's not what's going to happen. What's going to happen is he's only going to take half. So is the shvua just simply a formulation of, yes, I own half? Or maybe no. Maybe the shvua is stated in the negative. Now, again, the result's going to obviously be the same. But the negative statement is going to be, I don't own less than half. Okay. Now again, the I don't own less than half obviously results in the same thing, but shema ein lo baklum.
Right.
By saying that, what you could be also saying is I don't own less than half. Is that really I own nothing?
Right.
Now, if you say I don't own less than half, so the truth of the matter is that if you own nothing, you are still saying the truth. So let's say you own a quarter or you own a third, and your statement is, I don't own less than half. So now that's a lie. Because that just simply does not conform to your statement. But if you have nothing, so the statement of I don't own less than half still has validity to it. So now basically, as Rashi presents the question, so is he making an affirmative statement of, yes, I own half, or is he making it in the negative statement of, no, I don't own less than half. Or I should say, yes, I don't own less than half. So the Gemara says, so which way do we go? Amar Rav Huna, the Amar Shvur Sheyesh Li Ba, the Ein Li Ba Pachos Mechetzia. Okay, so Rav Huna, in clarification of what exactly the intent of the Mashbia is the following. First of all, he's making the positive statement of, I own it. Okay, no clarification as of yet, but simply, yes, I own a piece of it. All right, yesh li ba, I have some of it. And ve'ein li ba pachos mechetzia, and furthermore, here's where also my second part of my declaration, and it's not less than half. So once you say that, so now, in your shvua is incorporated the idea of zero is simply unacceptable. Meaning for me to own none of it is simply out of the question, because the first part of my shvua is, now it's not clear whether Rav Huna is actually modifying the shvua or just giving us the understanding of the shvua, but either way, the first part of the shvua is I own a piece of it. In other words, I'm absolutely saying I own it. Now in terms of how much, now let's clarify, it's no less than half. So the Gemara says, "V'neima shvur shikula shalit." So the Gemara says, "Okay, now I don't understand. When he made his original presentation in court, he said the whole thing belongs to me. So now, why is the shvur modified to I don't own less than half?" So the So the Gemara's answer is very simple, because he's not walking away with the whole thing. So you're not going to have him make a shvur that he owns the whole thing, and then just simply have him walk out with half. So the name of shvur shechetz yeshali. So the Gemara says, well, why doesn't the shvur just simply I own half of it? So the Gemara says, mar le dibure. So the Gemara says, well, that we can't do as well, because then that will that will go against what he originally stated. What he originally stated was that he owns the whole thing. So the shvur and the tana don't have agreement. So hashinami mar lili dibur. So the Gemara says, okay, but now is it really much better? His original tana was I own the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Now he's saying, and I don't own less than half. It's better, but it's not great. So the Gemara says, damar kulishli. So the Gemara says, no. Here's how it's understood. In other words, my original statement stands. I say the whole thing belongs to me. But considering the fact that you also have a taina, so I'm not going to backtrack on my original taina. My original taina was kulot shali. But here's what I'll say, and it's not a contradiction to my first point, which is the whole thing belongs to me. I'm saying now I own it, and no less than half. Okay, now no less than half is not in contradiction to the whole thing belongs to me. But I also have to take into account the fact that you're also holding part of it, and you're also going to make a shvua. So in deference to you, I'm not changing my original position, but I'm just simply making a statement that allows room for you. So the Gemara says, okay, now they're both holding on to the item. It sounds like we've gone down this point before. It doesn't sound like that. We have gone down this point before. They're both holding on to the item, and they're both going to make a shvua, and they're both going to walk away with half. What would be the point of making the shvua when all said and done, they're both holding the item? Going back to a point that we made in the original presentation of the shvua, according to Rav Yochanan, the shvua is a din derabanan, it's a takana derabanan. Chachamim don't want us to simply be grabbing other people's property and simply making this claim that, hey, part of it belongs to me, and look, we're coming to court and we're both holding on to it. And the other person's looking at me like, what are you doing? That's my item. You're just going to grab it and go to court and you're going to make a shvua? I'm sorry. I said too much. You're just going to grab it, and you're going to court, and we're going to divide it, and that's right. So the shvua is there to try to dissuade people from doing such actions, because people typically are afraid to make a shvua, and once we involve a shvua in the matter, so people will be more inclined to do the right thing. Okay, v'neima. Now we start with a line of questioning of the Gemara that takes us well into today's daf. Okay, so we're on Hamad base, we're halfway down in the Amud, and the words we're starting with right now in the Gemara is the words v'neima, and the Gemara says, let's take it now with the following into consideration. Okay. Why did the Chachamim legislate the Shvua? The answer to that question has just been presented by Rav Yochanan in the Gemara. The answer is because we're suspicious. Meaning, we don't want people to just simply grab other people's property, run to court while the two of them are holding on to it, and the court's saying, okay, let's divide it. So therefore, what we're going to do is we're going to have them both make a shvua, so basically it will deter people from behaving in such a manner. So that means now, let's follow this through and bring it now to its logical conclusion, that of the two people that go to court, we for sure suspect one of them of doing something disingenuous. Or, let's say it a little bit more realistically, one of them is stealing. Okay, it's the best way to say it, it's the easiest way to say it. That's what we're suspicious of. And now, based on that suspicion, we're going to have them make a shvua. So the Gemara says now, fundamentally, is that right? Meaning, are we going to now have someone be suspected of stealing and then say, oh, you know what? We suspect you of stealing, but you know what? Go ahead and make a shvua. We're okay with that. Are we really comfortable with that? Where someone is suspected of stealing and now come to court and now you're going to make a shvua? And now we're supposed to believe a shvua? Okay. Now the answer may very well simply be, yeah, that's right. In fact, the Gemara, at the end of this discussion, will not be the final word, but the Gemara at the end of the discussion will acknowledge that that may in fact be right. That a person, on one hand, is very comfortable taking other people's money, more so than going to court, holding a Sefer Torah in his hands, and using, making a shua in the name of God.
But you're forcing the owner also to swear.
Yeah, but that's fine. The owner is telling the truth. Well, that's, in other words, and if it's just a question of making a shua to protect my property, fine, I'll do that. But what we're asking a person to do is a suspected thief who we're trying to dissuade from stealing, so we're going to make him make a shua. And the Gemara is really saying, and the Gemara is asking now, is that realistic? Can we ask him to make a shvuah when we suspect him of stealing? So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, no, we don't say that. If a person is suspected of stealing, we won't ask him to make a shvuah. So the Gemara now is going to take us through a number of different examples and circumstances throughout the world of shvuah where this doesn't seem to play out. And the Gemara is going to explain in all these cases where we're basically going to say in all of these cases that really the truth of the matter is that he's not a suspected thief. He really is a good guy. So let's go step by step. Number one, the Gemara starts off with Modim Mimiksas. Like we've discussed since the beginning of the Masechta, if somebody makes a claim against you and you have a partial admission, so the Torah imposes upon you to make a shvua on the part that you are denying that you owe. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, now isn't that a perfect example of someone who we suspect? Now clearly we suspect him because he now has admitted to part of the claim, but he's denying part of the claim. And yet, what does the Torah say to such an individual? Go ahead and make a shvuah. So he's a suspected thief, and we're making him make a shvuah. But the Gemara says, but no. But hasam ishtamutika mishtamit lei kederava. So the Gemara says, yeah, but remember, just a couple days ago in the Daf on Gimel Amud Beis, the Gemara says, no, we don't assume he's a bad guy. In fact, we assume he's a good guy. In fact, that's why the Torah has him making a shvuah. Because as Rava's explanation went on Daf Gimel Amud Beis, the truth of the matter is that really he owes the whole thing and he wants to admit to owning the whole thing. Just happens to be that currently he doesn't have the cash. And so he's just delaying, he's just stalling for time. Stalling for time is not a bad guy. Okay, it's just because he's disorganized. But he's not a bad guy. And so that's what he's trying to do. And what the Torah therefore is encouraging him to do is just admit everything right now because you do owe everything. And that's what the Shavuot is there for. So the Gemara says, Teda. And the Gemara says, I'll tell you, this line of reasoning is a good line of reasoning. Because consider, we go over the statement of Rav Chista. We've seen the statement before as well. In that if a person's kofer b'malve, somebody says you owe me money, and he just simply denies it. He flat out denies it, and it turns out that he's caught lying. So he is not disqualified to be an aid. He can continue to be an aid. Why shouldn't that be? Meaning he lied. He just lied. So the answer is, as we're now saying, just because you're denying a loan does not make you a bad person. In fact, the easy explanation would be that you know you owe the money, you're going to pay the money, you're just right now stalling time. And by stalling time, you're just simply going to deny in the meantime so that you can stall time. Again, it's not the best position, it's not the best place to be in, but certainly to call the person a disingenuous person, to bar him from testifying in a court of law, so we're not going to go to that extent. When it comes to a pikadon, on the other hand, where an object was deposited by him and he denies that, so there he's a bad guy. Meaning, where's the object right now? And if you're saying you're stalling because, in other words, either you have it or you don't have it. So, and stalling over there is unlikely. So the Gemara says, Elahadani Rami Barchama. So the Gemara says, okay, let's go over another example. So again, we're just going to keep doing this again and again. Going through the numerous examples of Shvu in the Torah and throughout the Mishnayos. And seeing whether or not we are going to defend this position that if a person is suspected on stealing, we're not going to ask him to make a shvua. And the only time a person is going to make a shvua is when he's fundamentally a good person. So the Gemara says, well, why don't we consider the following? Okay, so we were also just here a day ago in the Daf, and we did this back in Baba Kama as well, in that the opinion of Rami Bar Chama in the Brice that just quoted is that in order to make a shvua sepikadon, there must be three separate claims going on. or three separate tainas being said by the shomer. One, I admit to part of your claim. Two, I deny part of your claim. Three, I have a legitimate exemption on part of the claim. And so therefore, the only way that all three of these can play out is only if there were three objects that were deposited by him. So like the example that we just gave yesterday, three cows were deposited by him. So he says, on one cow, I don't know what you're talking about. On the second cow, I owe you, admittedly. And on the third cow, I have a legitimate exemption why I don't pay you. Only when your taina has those three elements, do you make a shvosa bikadon? So the Gemara says, "Nema migidu chasha mamon chasha shvosa." So the Gemara says, "Now here, under this circumstance, he's certainly suspected. Meaning, consider the towing. The owner of the item is saying to him, you owe me three. He, in response, is saying, well, of the three, one of them, I don't know what you're talking about. Meaning, I am denying categorically that I owe you the third item. So now, he's certainly suspected of stealing. He's going against the claim of the owner. And yet, the Torah says, now is a good time to make a shvua. Isn't he chashan amamona? And if he's chashan amamona, shouldn't he be chashan shvua? So, asam nam, ishtemu kamisham, mitzavra mishkachin laganav, v'tafsin alay. So the Gemara says, once again, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. And we can give him the benefit of the doubt because, consider, maybe his argument goes like this. What was his defense? His defense was it was stolen. Maybe the truth of the matter is it wasn't stolen. And maybe the truth of the matter is that he's just going to, he's just trying to buy time so that he can find the ganav and get the item back. Or maybe his claim was that it was lost. And right now he doesn't want to admit that he lost it. So maybe what he's just simply doing is buying time until he can find it in the swamp. And then he would bring it. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, okay, so let's go back to our previous statement. The previous statement quoted in the name of Chista is that if a person were to deny a pikadon, he's posaleidus. So the Gemara says, why should that be? Why don't we just make the same exact argument? And that would be that, well, he's just trying to stall and buy time in order to find the item. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, okay, we'll just simply modify the statement to Rav Chista that we said earlier. According to Rav Chista, when a person denies a pikadon, and he will be posel eidus, that's talking specifically, kegon dasu sahadivasi dobe, da ishaita isay le pikadon bebeise, vehava yanda. Where the witnesses not only say that he had the item, but the witnesses say that he had the item in his house at the time that he denied it. So he is categorically a liar, and we'll add to that also a thief, and that's why he's pasaleidus. Inami, davin nakale biyadein. Or the Gemara says, we don't have the witnesses testifying, but he's simply holding on to the item, meaning we caught him with the item while denying that he didn't have the item. So under those circumstances, because now it has been established that he's a thief, so therefore he's pasaleidus. But you're right. Just the denial of the pikadon by itself does not automatically assume that he is a thief. So the Gemara says, okay, let's go to a shvua that was taught by Rav Huna, that will be taught, I should say, by Rav Huna. It's coming up later in the Masechta. And it goes on the following scenario. Let's say you have a scenario in which a person is a person was given an item to deposit by him. He's a shomer chinam, and he's not a paid watchman, and the item was either lost or stolen. And he's taken to court by the owner, and he says, "Look, right now here's what I can do. What I can do is I could just simply make the claim that the item was lost or stolen, and I will have a legitimate exemption. But you know what I'd rather do? I'd rather pay for the item." Okay? And quite understandable. Even though he has a legal exemption to relieve himself from any type of liability, but at the same time, his reputation, his credibility, he has a moral compass. He feels like it's just not right. Just not right that I'm gonna be legally exempt, even though it is right. But he feels morally bound. So he says, I want to pay for the item. So Rav Huna teaches us, it's coming up later in the Masechta. So Rav Huna teaches us that under those circumstances, fine, you want to pay for the item, that's fine, but do us a small favor. just come to court and swear that you're not currently holding the item. That's all. So the Gemara says, so now, Neima, Migu de Chasher, Mamun Chasher Ashvasa. Over here, think about what we're asking him to swear. Swear that you don't have the item. Meaning, basically, we suspect you of stealing the item. Now, stealing is not the right word over here. It's not stealing. In other words, basically taking the item and paying for it. Okay, we would call in halacha something more like chomes, extortion. Even that's a little bit strong worded over here because he was given the item. But still, the basic idea is that it's not your item. You were asked to watch it. You kind of liked it. You decide to yourself, you know what? I'll give him a story about what happened to it, and then I'll keep it, but I'll pay for it. To which that the Gemara is saying now, so now, obviously the shvua we're asking him to make is based on the fact that we suspect him of wanting to keep the item. So the Gemara says, so how could you do that? So the Gemara says, we're not going to call that a case of chasher hamamona. Chasher hamamona means that we suspect that a guy is a bad person, / he's taking something that does not belong to him. In this particular case, even though what he's doing is wrong, but he doesn't believe it's wrong. In fact, think about it. From his standpoint, yeah, I'm telling a little bit of a story, but I'm not stealing something. In fact, I'm paying for the item. So he's what the Gemara is referring to as more over here, meaning more heter. He'll justify and rationalize his action by simply paying for the item that he is holding on to. And so this does not qualify as chashud amamona. Amle Rav Acha midiftil Ravina v'hakavra lo sachmod. Sorry, al lav delo sachmod. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. How could you say he's not a bad person? This person is in violation of the Isser and the Torah of Losachmod. Now, right, number 10 on the Aseret HaDibros, you're not allowed to covet something that does not belong to you. He is clearly coveting, right? And more than coveting. I mean, why? I shouldn't say more than coveting. Right? In other words, he's paying for the item, but obviously holding onto an item that does not belong to him, coveting the item, and now look what he's doing because as a result of the chimud, of the coveting. Making up a story, paying for the item. So the Gemara says, Lo sachmod le'inchi below dami mashmalahu. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you know what the perception of lo sachmod is? The perception of lo sachmod is that I only violate lo sachmod when I don't pay for an item. But if I pay for somebody else's item, I'm not in violation of lo sachmod. Now this is so interesting because the Gemara is saying over here, that's the perception. It's not the reality. Now, what certainly comes out from our Gemara, seemingly, is that the reality is that even if I were to pay for it, I'm still in violation of Lo Sachmod. That's what the Gemara seems to indicate. But in the context of our Gemara, here's what the Gemara certainly is saying. Based on the misperception of what people think the Torah's intent is, so therefore, we'll allow him to make a shvua, he's not a bad guy. He may not be correct in his understanding of the Torah, but since people believe that when you pay for an item, you're not in violation of Lo Sachmod, therefore we'll allow him to make a shvua because he didn't think he was violating the Torah. Okay.
But yeah. This comes back to becoming a monetary issue.
Right, but in other words, it is, of course it's a monetary issue.
A monetary issue is not allowed to swear.
Right, but in other words, the principle is that if you're chashud amamona, if you're suspected of taking somebody else's money, if you're suspected of taking somebody else's money, so you can't make a shvua. What the Gemara now is saying here in defending that we don't say that, and we will not ask somebody who's chashud mamon to make a shvua, is that this person is not a chashud. And this person is not a chashud because people, I mean, this is the general thinking of people, is that if I'm paying for the item, I didn't violate the issur. Even though that's not right, but that's what people think. Okay, so there's a lot to consider in this Gemara. We now turn to the top of Vav Amud Aleph. So the Gemara says, "Ve'ela ha'damar Rav Nachman mashbino so shvuos eses." So the Gemara says, "Okay, let's go to the shvuah that Rav Nachman. Second time in the Masechta we're introduced to the idea that according to Rav Nachman, a rabbinic shvuah was imposed in a case of a full denial." Meaning, from the Torah's perspective, if a person makes a full denial, you claim I owe you $100, I say I owe you zero. From the Torah's perspective, there's no shvuah. Shvua only comes in the case of Modeh B'Miksas, but not in Kofar HaKol. Rav Nachman tells us that there was a rabbinic enactment that was made, and just as an interesting side point, seemingly this Shvua was imposed by the Chachamim after the Mishnayos, because you're not going to see a reference to the Shvua's essence anywhere in the Mishnayos. Okay. I say that as an interesting parenthetical note. But the Gemara says, but Rav Nachman teaches us that if somebody were made a claim against a person and he denies everything, so that person denies everything, is going to make a Shavuos Eses. So the Gemara says, name Amigdur Chashem Amon Chashem Shavuosa. So the Gemara says here, he just denied a claim against him. He's certainly Chashem Amamona. And we're asking him to make a Shavuos. And unlike the case of Modeh B'Miksas where we were there, we gave justification, rationalization, that really he's a good guy and he owes everything. He just can't pay everything over here. In this scenario where he's making a full denial, it's hard to justify that he's a good guy. The Gemara says, and before answering that question, Vesu hadini Rabbi Chia, Shinishma minotli mi balabayas, name amigdur chashem amon chashem shvuasa. This is a case that we also saw just a short couple days ago in Bar Mitzia, where I had an owner who asked the chenvani to pay his workers with food and to keep a tab, and that he'll pay the chenvani. And then the chenvani goes over to the balabayas and says, okay, I paid your workers. Okay, pay me. The workers go to the Baal Bais and say, you know that Chenvani didn't give us a dime, didn't give us any food, so you owe us our wages. And so the two now are coming to the Baal Bais and making the claim against him, you didn't pay me. Now, one of them is not telling the truth. And according to the Chachamim, what they're going to have is they're going to have both of them make a Shua, and they're both going to collect from the Baal Bais. Okay. And now one of them is going to lie in court in order to get his money, and according to the Chachamim, so be it. Isn't that a perfect example of somebody who's chashan amamona? Because one of them is going to be lying, and meaning we're going to ask to make a shvua. And the Gemara says, and let's not even answer that question. Let's just keep going. So when a person is holding on to an item and making a legitimate exemption, right? If he's a shomer chinam, right? It was lost or stolen. If he's a shomer sachar, ne'enas, something happened beyond my control. So under those circumstances, so he has to make a shvur sapikadon. And within the shvur sapikadon, there are three aspects of the shvur. One, shalom pashati ba, I was not negligent. Two, shvur shalom shalachti bo yad, I did not misappropriate the item. I was asked to watch the item. I never used the item for myself. Rashi explains. The moment he takes the item and uses it for himself, he now is a gazlan. And a gazlan has full liability, no exemption. And shvur she'ena b'rishusi. And also, I'm going to make a shvur that's not on my property right now. So once again, so here we go once again with a very clear example of somebody who we clearly suspect of taking something that doesn't belong to him, otherwise known as being a gazlan, and allowing him to make a shvur. So the Gemara just gave three examples back to back to back where a person's chasham amona, and we're going to ask him to make a shvua. The case of Rav Nachman Shvuas Heses, the case of the Baal Abayis and the Chenvani, where the Chenvani and the Poalim are both going to be making a shvua, one of them is going to lie, and Rav Sheshes' clarification that when you make a shvua sebikadon, there are three elements to that shvua, of which you're basically saying, no, I didn't steal it. No, I didn't misappropriate it. So those are three clear examples where a person clearly is chashed al shvua. Sorry. Let me say that again. Chashan al mamona, and meanwhile we're allowing him to make a shvua. So the Gemara says, El alo armin amigo de chashan mamona chashan shvuasa. So the Gemara finally concludes and says, okay, so we're just going to change the premise. Like I explained earlier, we're just going to change the premise. And that is that yes, even when a person is suspected on stealing, we're going to allow him to make a shvua. And I guess the approach of the Gemara right now is that despite the fact that people may in fact be comfortable with other people's money, they'll be less comfortable, even that person will be less comfortable going into court, holding a Sefer Torah, saying a Shavua, B'Shem Hashem, meaning even that hardened individual will still understand the seriousness of making a Shavua. Okay. Abai Amar, Chayshin and Shema, Milva Yeshana, Yeshlo Alav. Abai, as Rashi explains, says, look, I'm still going to defend our original position. Meaning, the original position is that if someone's chashan al mamon, he's not going to be allowed to make a shvua in court. And what I'll say is the following: that in all these scenarios that you just painted out for us, where a person is taking something that doesn't belong to him, and the question we've asked is, well, how can you allow him to make a shvua? So Abaye says, even in these cases, I could see room for justification. It's not right what the person's doing, but at least he could justify it. So for example, let's say Shema Milva Yishana Yeshlo Alav. Let's say that really the truth of the matter is that guy has owed me money for such a long time. And every now and then I come over to him and I say, you know, you still owe me money. He looks at me, he shrugs his shoulders, he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Right, I don't know. And finally, that guy comes over to me and says, look, I'm going away. Can you hold this on? Can you hold on to this for me while I go away? I say, sure, no problem at all. And then he comes back and he says, where's my item? And I say, well, I don't know. What item? What are you talking about? So in other words, it could very well be that the shomer is in fact holding on to the item, but feels justified in doing so because maybe this guy has owed him a loan for some time, and maybe he's just looking for a way to collect on his loan. Now, I know that it's unlikely, but at least it's within the realm of possibility, and we don't have to assume the person is chashad al mamona. So the Gemara says, Yahachi neshka below shvua. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, so allow him to take it without a shvua. In other words, if he really believes that the guy owes the money, so okay, so you take it from him. So the Gemara says, "Ela chayshin Hashem asafik milva yishan yesh lo alav." So the Gemara is the Gemara finally concedes, and the Gemara says, "Okay, it's not that he for sure knows that he owes money, but safik. I think so. So I think he actually owes." He owes me money, and so based on the suspicion that he owes me money, so I'm going to hold on to the item. So now, as Rashi explains, so in terms of the category of chashan mamona, not so much. Meaning, he doesn't know with 100% confidence, but he believes that this guy owes me money. So therefore, he asked me to watch an item for him, I'll hold on to the item. Now when it comes to coming to court and swearing about it, so that belief will not give him the enough confidence to make a shvua when he's not 100% sure. So Allah Chayshin Shem Asafik Melva Yeshani Yeshlo Alav V'Lav Amrinat Tuf Is Mamona Misfeka Mishtaba. Mishtaba Nami Misafik. Just because I'm ready to take somebody's money out of doubt does not necessarily mean that I'm ready to swear about it out of doubt. Okay, I'm Rav Sheshes Breda of Edi, Parshi Inshi Misafik Shvua, V'lo Parshi Misafik Mamona. So my time, my mamon Isa Bechazara Shvua, Leitza Bechazara. So in Rav Sheshes' explanation, beautiful. Look, when it comes to money, if I don't know 100% that he owes me money, and I kind of think so, I'm not sure though, so there I'll just take it. Because think about where we can go from here. Let's say I'm wrong. Okay, if I'm wrong, I'll just simply return the money back to him. Fine. So therefore, I'll risk it on the front end that maybe he doesn't owe me the money because when all said and done, if I'm wrong, I'll just give him back the money. But you see, with a shvua, once you make a shvua, that's it. You can't go back. You can't walk back on your shvua. So if I may, in fact, if I think he owes me money, but now it comes to coming to court and making a shvua about this, and I'm not 100% sure, I will not make a shvua because I cannot walk back on my shvua. Okay, by Rav Zera. Okay, we're in the middle of Vav and Aleph, and here we go. Classic discussion of the Gemara, one that's very popular in the yeshivas. They spend a lot of time on this. We do not spend a lot of time on this, but that's what you get with Daf Yomi. So, but we hopefully will present it just on the simplest level, clearly and concisely. By Rav Zera, Tafa Echa Befaneinu Mahu. Okay, we go to court. And we're holding on to the garment, the two of us. And so we go back to our Mishnah, Shnei Mochzim Batalis, two people holding on to a talis. So we are going to divide it with a shvua. So Reb Zera now asks the following question. Let's say that we're holding on to the item, and then him, with one quick and very strong yank, takes the item just and rips it right out of my hands. And so now, what would be the halacha? So the Gemara says, and he does so, I'm sorry, let me just add one important detail, bifaneinu. He does it in front of us, meaning he does it right in court. So what would be the halacha? So mahu heichidami. So the Gemara says, well, that's a strange scenario. It sounds like we're back in kindergarten. We're both holding on to the item. Actually, the truth of the matter is, all right, I've seen it even beyond kindergarten. So we're both holding on to the item, and one person says, you know what? Enough of this. Money held in dispute, not a problem anymore. Yanks it, no longer held in dispute. I now have it. So the Gemara says, Idish asek oduya duilei. So the Gemara says, well, let's look at the other person's reaction. If he kind of shrugs his shoulder and has no response, so basically that's an admission that, you know what, he really is the owner, right? By him forcing it out of my hands, that he was just so bothered by the fact that I grabbed it, and I'm not the owner, and so you know what? Okay, it really belongs to him. Now the Gemara says, now if his reaction is, he starts screaming and protesting, what is going on over here? I can't believe, right? We're there in Beis Din. He's basically looking at the judges, and he's saying, do you see what just happened? That's ridiculous. I really believe it's mine. I'm holding on to it, and he just grabbed it from me. So if he's protesting, what more can we expect from him, meaning that's what he should be doing? So the Gemara says, "Lo tzricha d'shasik mikarva hadot savach." So the Gemara says, well, he was a little bit ambiguous in his reaction. First part of his reaction is that he was quiet. And then after a minute, he then looks around the room. He sees that everyone's now suspicious of the fact that, oh, he didn't respond to the fact that the garment was just pulled right out of his hands, and then he starts screaming and yelling. So the Gemara says, now, how do you understand the ambiguity in his response? My. So the Gemara says, at first glance, he was quiet because it's an admission. So on the other hand, the interpretation could go as follows. Look, you know why I was quiet? Because why do I need to respond? We're in Beis Din. I have the judges sitting right over there. They're looking at the two of us. They see that I'm holding on to it. So it was yanked out of my hand. I thought that the judges will just simply turn to him and say, you can now, would you please give it back to him, or at least give him his holding back to the talis? Meaning, what are you doing? So I thought the judges would just simply defend me. But then I see that they're looking at me, and they're not defending me. So then I start screaming. Maybe that could be the explanation. So the Gemara says, now that we have explained the scenario a little bit better, we're talking now not about a scenario where he was just quiet, not about a scenario where he was immediately protesting. We're talking about a scenario in which he was first quiet, and then he protested, and the ambiguity of his response could be interpreted one of two ways. Now with that stated, so the Gemara says, now let's explore. So Rav Nachman here quotes the Braisa, and the Braisa says, when is it true that we're going to divide the item with a Shvuah? Only in a scenario where they're both holding on to the item, and but if one person is holding, then the other person is making a claim against something that he does not own, and so therefore we go back to the rule of so the Gemara says, hechi dami. Now in that braisa, did you understand that braisa? Because the Gemara says, if the braisa is meant to be understood on the simplest of levels, we have two, if both of them holding it, split. If one of them holding it, how much mechaver olav araya? That is ABCs. That's so basic. So the Gemara says, El shetak v'echa befanenu. So the Gemara says, it must be that the Bryce is talking about a case where one of them is pulling it away from us. In front of the judges. Lo. Ha'ach ba ma'izkin, k'lunda asa l'kama k'dat fiso le'tavayu, v'amrin l'hu zilu plugu. So the Gemara says, no. The case that Bryce is dealing with is the following. They come to us while holding the item together, like our mission describes. And then Beis Din says, okay, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go ahead and you're going to divide the item. Venafku. And then they leave, meaning the ruling of Beis Din was issued that they're going to divide the item. Vahadar also kitafasu chaminayu. Then they come back to Beis Din and one of them is holding it. Hi, Amar Duilei. And the one who's holding it says, you know, after we left Beis Din, he says, you know what? Finally, that guy came over to me and admitted to me, you know what? It's really yours. And even though I've been playing the game all this while, even in front of Beis Din, but you know what? I admit the item is yours. And the other person says, no, I rented the item to him, meaning that the only reason why he's holding on to it right now is because we agreed that the item 50% belongs to him, 50% belongs to me. In fact, we just sat down in front of Beis Din and they ruled in that way. But what I then decided to do is I decided that, you know what, he wanted to borrow the whole item, so, or I should say rent the whole item, so I rented it to him. Damrin Alei, which at which point now we say to the person who's not holding the item anymore, wow, is that unlikely? Prior to this, you came into court and we were calling him names like Gazlan, and now you're telling us that you rented the item to him, the same person who a couple of minutes earlier you called the Gazlan. So or the Gemara says, I'll give you another explanation what the Bryce is talking about. The Bryce is talking about a case where one person is holding on to it nice and tight, and the other person has got just kind of like a loose holding on it. Now, please don't ask me because I do not know. What's the difference between a tight grasp versus kind of like a loose, very lame, just like it's like holding on to a tassel. I'm not 100% sure what the Gemara means by masrach beisruche, but okay, whatever. He does not have a firm holding. Now it's true that Simchas is of the opinion that a dispute of money is going to be divided without a shvua, but more Simchas is sircha lafklami. Even Simchas will tell you that if it's just sircha, if he's just kind of like holding on to the end, not a firm grasp, even Simchas will tell you that is halachically insignificant. Now, Adkan. Where do we stand right now in the Gemara? Question was asked. In front of Beis Din, a tekifa, you pulled the item away from the other person in front of Beis Din. And the reaction was ambiguous. First silence and then protest. So what do we say under those circumstances? The Gemara raises the question. The Gemara tries to prove it from a Mishnah, from a Braisa. The Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Imtim Salomar. Now the Gemara takes the next step. You know how this works. The Gemara does this time and again. Even though the question was asked and unresolved, but Imtim Salomar tells us, well, let's walk forward with an assumption. And let's say the assumption is Takfa Echa Befanina Motsino Somi Ado. Let's say that if somebody does a tekifa, if somebody pulls it, so we're still going to ask/tell him, you give it back to him, and we're still going to divide the item. Higdisha eina mikudeshes. So that means then that if while each one of them is holding on to the item, if a person attempts to be makdish the item is not mikudash. It does not become sanctified for the very simple reason that you don't have ownership over the entire item. And even upon pulling the item away, you still don't have full ownership of the item if you're doing so in front of Beis Din. However, but let's say we do the following were to happen. Let's say in court, one of them just pulls it away from the other and we don't take it away from him. Meaning that the tkifa, the pulling in front of Beis Din, and again, in the ambiguous response being first silence and then protest, so under those circumstances, let's assume going forward that it's his, and we will not pull it, and we will not take it away from him. So then higdisha below takfa mahu. So if that's our assumption going forward, what if now instead of pulling the item away from the other person, let's say he was makdish it. So you see, even though you're not physically taking it away from the other person, but halachically you are. Because we know that in terms of regular kinyanim, you have to do an action in order to create a kinyan. However, when it comes to giving something to the Beis HaMikdash, an amira is sufficient. All you need to do is a declaration, and the item immediately goes into the Rishus HaKdesh. So here, we're basically trying to compare a physical acquisition to that of the halachic acquisition of Amir Legavoa. So if Tkifa works, so then, perhaps, this is what the Gemara is now entertaining, Amir Legavoa should work as well.
He only owns it after the act.
All right, only obviously.
So here, by saying something, he doesn't own it yet.
But the saying something vis-a-vis Hekdesh is all you need in order to affect Kenyan.
Right. But you have to own it to make it hechter.
So fine. So by virtue of the fact that if he pulled it, that is a declaration of ownership, and it results in ownership. So a halachic pulling in that hektesh, maybe, in other words, the Gemara is entertaining it. The Gemara is not saying it absolutely, but may very well result in the same in the same effect. Odilma hashemia halotakfa, or the Gemara says maybe no, maybe we can't compare the two. Tkifa is when I'm physically pulling the item away from him, and I am now the sole holder of the item. However, halachically, if all I just simply say is that it now belongs to Hektish, maybe it's not the same. And uksivi ishki akish is beis kodesh, my beis berushuso af kol berushuso. So the Gemara says, and we know that in order to affect something to go to Hektish, it has to be in your possession. So lafuke haide la berushuso. But over here, if you're holding on to the item together with somebody else, maybe that does not qualify enough to be in your reshus. Even though, had you done tekifa, it would be in your reshus, but right now, you haven't. So tashma. So the Gemara says, well, let's consider now the following, haima susa. So the Gemara now turns to a bathhouse. And in such bathhouse, da'ava menatze ala beitre. So two people were fighting over who is the rightful owner of the bathhouse. So hayam ardidihu, and the claims are really simple. Each one claims that it belongs to them. So kam chaminahu akdashe. So now one of the people that were involved in the debate, so he was makdish the bathhouse. So it's not exactly similar to our case over here about the talis and both of them are holding on to and one of them is being makdish. Over here we're talking about property, but halachically speaking, it works on a similar level so that both of them are making claims to it and one decides to be makdish. So now parshimine Rav Chananya, Rav Oshe, v'kul Rabbanan. So now the response is that the rabbis in the community were actually concerned that now this bathhouse belongs to Hektish and enjoying the bathhouse would be a violation of benefiting from Hektish. So va'amle Rav Oshe l'rabba. So Rav Oshe says to Rabba, do us a favor. Like, we don't know what the halachic status of this bathhouse is. So, on your next trip out there, could you please ask a shayla? So, ki azlos kamei to Rav Chista, the next time, l'kafre, next time you go to Rav Chista's in Kafre, by mine. So ask him the question, and please find out what is the story. Ki azlos l'sura amalei Rav Hamnuna masnitzen he. Now, on his way to Kafre, he stops in the town of Sura, and he gets to speak to Rav Hamnuna. And he says to Rav Hamnuna, what do you think? And Rav Hamnuna says, well, funny you should ask. What I think is very clear. It's a Mishnah. And the Mishnah goes like this. So let's say you have a case of a Suffolk Bechor. Now, it doesn't matter in this context whether it's human, whether it's animal. And it's a Suffolk because the mother gave birth to something before, but we don't know if that something before qualified as a birth or not as a birth, and so therefore we don't know if the subsequent birth, in fact, does belong or does not belong to the Kohen. So, the ruling is that whoever is holding on to the item right now is the owner, and anyone who's trying to extract it from him, alav araya. And on this, there's another brisa that says, asur b'giza v'avoda, that it's going to be prohibited in both shearing and working. Meaning that, despite the fact that who is ever holding on to the item gets to keep the item, but it's still going to be usher in both Giza and Avoda. Now, at this point in time, as Rashi points out, what is our Havamina? Kasakadatcha, Rashi. Rashi is a little bit above where we are in the Gemara. Kasakadachim Yad Yisrohein have a Kohen Motzi Mechaver Ala Viraya. Meaning, at this point in time, even if the Yisrael is holding on to the item, it is, from the Kohen's perspective, not his. Because again, we don't know if the animal is or is not a Bechor. And so therefore, the Kohen's trying to extract something that may not in fact belong to him. And that means now that if the Kohen were to grab it, and the Yisrael had that ambiguous response of first silence and then screaming, so now the Yisrael turns into the Motzi Mechavero. So now we have, or at least we're trying to create a scenario very similar to our original case of the two people holding a talis and one grabbing it, or the case of the bathhouse where two people are debating who is the owner and one of them is again, grabbing it is a strong word, because it's not true, not grabbing it, but being makdish it, which is what we're trying to now explore, may in fact work on a similar level. And so basically what you have over here is a similar scenario, where you have a Safik Bechor, Yisrael, who was the original owner of the item, the Kohen, who now also has a claim to it, because it may in fact be a Bechor, the Kohen were now to grab it. So now, under these circumstances, it should belong to the Kohen. And the Yisrael is now considered a Motzi Mechavera. So now, with all that, there's a lot of variables, I know. But with all that in play now, what is the conclusion? Asurin Begiza Vavoda. Meaning, because it's possibly Kachim, so therefore, you're not allowed to work the animal, you're not allowed to shear the animal. And what we got from over here is that this falls under the category of Amotzi Mechaver Alav Raya. So now, Bechor Adam Vecha Bechor Behemah, I'm sorry. So, Asa Bekizav Avoda. Va'achad Amar Takfa Kohen, Ein Motzi No Somiyado, Diktani Amotzi Mechaver Alav Raya, Vechilo Sakfo, and had the Kohen not grabbed it, Asurim Bekizav Avoda. It still would be Asa Bekizav Avoda. So, the impression that you get over here is that even without the tkifa, it still would be also begiza vavoda. Let's now take that back to the case of the bathhouse. In the case of the bathhouse, so if one of the disputing owners of it were to be makdashit, presumably the result would be it should belong to Hekdesh. So this would seem to, putting all these variables together, seem to construct an argument in which is if you have two disputing parties over an item, and one of them was makdish the item, just like tekifa would allow you to hold on to the item, being makdish it also would make you the proprietor, or not you the proprietor, but give the hekdesh the ownership of that item. That is what the Gemara is presenting as an argument. Okay, we'll stop. It's a strange place to stop, but we're going to stop here. And tomorrow we'll pick it up from this point in time.